When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 186 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. We're all back from our late summer holidays, should we say. I'm looking like a wish version of David Hasselhoff with a lovely bronze tan. And Lee and Pete have returned from their stag expedition in Edinburgh, a little worse for wear. But delighted to say, joining us once again is the fourth wheel of the podcast, and that's Phil Haywood. Phil, how are you after a weekend of no Everton Football Club?
Hi, mate. Hi, boys. Okay. No, it's been great. It's been a relief, really. Obviously, like you said, there, it's all my holidays. Obviously, I got stuck in Greece for a couple of days and then missed the Doncaster game in the end because obviously the flight time. So the time I actually get to go and see them, I miss a win. So it was nice just to have no game this weekend and obviously get back to normality, going back to work and things.
Well, we messaged, didn't we? Because I was just going away, and we sort of said, you were due back before the Doncaster game. I said, hopefully, all being well, you get back. That's right. I'd landed. That's right. And I'd flown on the day when the air traffic control situation had all kicked off. I'd literally out of the country just before it all kicked off. And I said, so yeah, hopefully your flight gets cancelled. I'm going to go and travel to Doncaster and watch Everton. And it happened. So that was my fault. I think that was down to me. But no, it was good. Obviously, we're not going to go over the games. Obviously, Doncaster, Sheffield United, we got a win in the cup, albeit a bit of a scruffy one by all accounts, but a win's a win. Obviously, first goal for Dan Juma, and also new signing Better, we're going to discuss in more details shortly. And then obviously, I suppose a morale boosting draw at Sheffield United after a decent-ish performance, where really, you could argue a point was probably fair, but we had our chances to win that game. But I think, Since we've been away, a lot's gone on, of course. A transfer window closed. And we find ourselves now with a squad of about 25, 26 players. And, by all accounts, we missed out, I would say, on probably two or three players that we probably needed in certain areas. Centre-half probably being one, another centre-mid, and another wide player would have been probably top of my list. A lot of links. Obviously, Willie Nonso's name appeared again late on. But we lost, Alex Iwobi went out the door, and something that we've not discussed, and a player that at times I'd say sort of much vilified by Everton fans in terms of you've got people who believe that he makes a huge contribution and his stats back that up. And I would agree, we've been advocates of Alex Iwobi. We think he does bring a lot to the Everton side, and in terms of assists, especially last season, he certainly did. But also his creative play and also what he tries to do in that final third. But the window's closed, Pete. And what are your thoughts, given the fact that we have let Alex Iwobi go? We're going to come on to obviously Demarai Gray in a minute as well. No one came in on deadline day, and we saw the likes of obviously Iwobi, Tom Cannon, another player who went as well. We saw us getting rid of players. No one else came in. Do you think, from between now and January, we're going to find ourselves a little bit short?
Potentially. I think we're going to need a lot of luck with injuries. I think it would be unfair to call the window a failure, because we're all very aware of the very tight and very strange kind of financial situation surrounding the club. I don't think anyone truly knows the full extent of it and obviously we've still got to wait to see what happens in October. But I think it'd be fair to say that the window's been a disappointment. You know, centre forward was the massive, massive priority, and we'll come on to talk a bit about Beto, but it seems like the club have potentially recruited really well into that position, and hopefully that'll really benefit Calvert-Lewin as well. But yeah, Alex Iwobi is a massive loss, I think, because just of his endeavour, his work rate, I think he, when you have a player like him in the team, I think it gives the rest of the team momentum. I think we really rely on him as an outlet at times to get us up the pitch. He's one of the few players that can carry the ball. Yeah, he's coming for a lot of stick, I think, for maybe some of his final product at times. But you're absolutely right. When you look at the stats, you know, relative to other Everton players, he's been one of our most productive assets. So the fact that we've let him go and maybe not brought anybody else in that can step into that role, it is concerning. I know we've got Jack Harrison, but for me, if and when he does come in, when he does regain enough fitness, it's not enough like for like. He's a very different player for me. So I think we'll really miss Alex Iwobi, and I just hope it doesn't prove to be crucial. We'll come on to talk about Damari Gray as well, but I think for me, that's a bad double whammy, because I really like Damari Gray. I know you might not get the same defensive output out of him, but I think he's one of our few attacking players with, you know, real quality, real ability to turn a game, change a game. You know, you go back to the Manchester City game, that equaliser he scored, the Arsenal goal he scored. He's one of the few players in the Everton squad with the ability to find a winning goal like that. You know, can go either side. You know, tricky, dangerous, and I think like Alex Iwobi, sometimes Damari Gray gets underestimated for the type of player he is. So I think we could end up really, really missing the two of them. And you know, we know what January transfer windows are like nowadays, that they're not a great time to recruit, and I don't think we can be too hopeful looking forward that we'll be any busier in January. So it's a bit of a strange one, really.
Well, it's that right-hand side, isn't it, really? Because if you look at the players that have gone, Alex Iwobi's been playing there now for quite a while. Whether, you know, he plays better off the left or he prefers to play centrally is another matter. But, you know, Sean Dyche, Frank Lampard, they all trusted him to play on that right-hand side. And with him going, with Damari Gray going, obviously, one, you know, our window closed, but the Saudi window was still open, and he went, obviously, in the last few days or so. We find ourselves now, we've been playing James Garner out there, you know, over the last couple of games or so. For me, doesn't really work. No slight on him, but he's not a right winger. It's as simple as that. You look at going forward, is it going to be a case of Dan Juma left and McNeil playing on the right-hand side? We know Dwight McNeil's natural game is to play on the left-hand side. He's so left-footed, it's unbelievable. And he likes to get that to the byline and put a ball across. That's his game. Now, because we haven't got the balance right, and Sean Dyche said multiple times about trying to get the balance right in this transfer window. For me, we haven't, and we've left ourselves with a huge hole on that right-hand side. Is that a concern for you, Phil? Because yet again, you know, we found ourselves in the first three or four games of this season already, sort of a square peg round hole situation where you're trying to just put players in, you know, to try and get through games. James Garner, obviously, is one example. You know, we've seen the likes of Dan Juma obviously play up top, and really he likes to play off the left-hand side, which obviously we've also seen as well. We're seeing players playing in positions which they shouldn't really be playing. Obviously, we've got players to come back in, but I just think that the balance that the manager was looking for with the sales of Alex Iwobi and Damari Gray has been lost almost.
No, I think you're right, Mike. And I again agree with everyone Pete said there. I think the key word that you've mentioned there is balance. And I think it's very unbalanced. And I think it's very lopsided. Like, we clearly, for me, James Garner's doing a job out there. And I don't think it works defensively, obviously, regarding Patterson. And I know he's had a lot of stick, but I just don't think that works at all. Like, cover and things like that on that side. on the left-hand side, obviously Jack Harrison, when he does eventually come back, he did his best part of his football as a left winger. You've got Dwight McNeil and you've got Dan Juma, obviously likes that side as well. Now, whether he puts Dwight McNeil in the centre, but then I think you're over flooded with central players as well, and all similar kind of players. Like, for me, Onana box to box, but he doesn't do enough for me, although I think his performance second half against Sheffield United was fairly good. Garner Gay, you know what you're going to get with him. Decore, box to box, he looks like he's the only one threatened who's going to score from midfield. But like you said, I think we always didn't use Iwobi to the best of his ability. I never thought he was a right winger. I thought he was doing like a James Garner job, just fitting in a position. I think Fulham, the first game of the season, was one of some of the best players I've seen him play in a long time, where he actually ran past a player. He liked to cut inside. Obviously, his shots were quite weak, and I think that's the thing with Iwobi. He seems to fall to pieces final third. But again, like Peter, I think he will be missed massively alongside Gray, because they either assist, or they'll get an assist, or they'll come up with the odd goal here or there. And the replacements that we've signed early in the window, you don't know what Jack Harrison, how he's going to come back. He might break down again. But I do worry. We have to have a look with the injury situation. But it's very lopsided, left hand side. Left is quite vulnerable, really, out wide on the right.
I think you're right. I think it does leave that vulnerability, and also, you know, when you. You know, we're a side that needs our wingers to offer cover and be defensively sound as well. And with Dwight McNeil on the left, I think we've had that off him in the last sort of 6 months or so since Sean Dyche came in. Obviously, he returned to the squad and got about 15 minutes or so against Sheffield United. So hopefully he'll be good to go for the Arsenal game. But then that right hand side is a massive puzzle for me. You know, with no Seamus Coleman. Obviously, Nathan Patterson's coming for a little bit of stick. I think it's a bit unfair. I think that defensively he's being okay. I do think there's a lot of work there to be done, but he's a young kid. You know, he's only played, I think, senior games, between 30 and 40 games in his career. So very much like Amadou Onana when he first came in. He played a handful of games, really, in men's football. That's a big thing. And you need to start to get partnerships going throughout the side, whether it be the two centre-halves, whether it be left-hand side, right-hand side, the middle of midfield, whatever the situation is. And I think the right-hand side is a massive, massive problem area for us, because at the moment, and even with players who are going to come back in, where do we get that balance from? And that's a huge issue, I think, going forward. And I think it was obvious, you know, the article that came out in The Athletic after the transfer window closed, and it said that literally Everton spent €3 million on a loan fee for Dan Juma. Everything else was done on buy now, pay next year. So the likes of Beto, the likes of Yusuf Chimiti. Obviously, we've got Ashley Young in on a free, and obviously a loan deal for Jack Harrison as well. So very much a case of there was very little in the way of outgoing. Obviously, Everton would have had to have paid something for deals that he did last year. So obviously, Onana, I'm sure there was some kind of money due for that kind of deal, for example. So Everton are very much up against it financially. It's very, very clear. And that's why, you know, you mentioned there, Peter, obviously, with January, say, 3 or 4 months away, what will we actually do in January? Well, chances are nothing. It's probably the honest truth, because at the moment, the investment still hasn't come in. We know MSP Capital have come away. There's loads of talk again about 777. There's also, I think, an Asian consortium that's been mentioned as well. So we expect, obviously, investments to come in over the next 3 or 4 months. It's not guaranteed. We thought the investment would have come in from MSP by now. But unfortunately, given the fact that we have a third party who we owe £200 million to, almost calling the shots, we don't know how it's going to play out. So it's not been easy for Kevin Thelwell and Sean Dyche. I think in terms of the players that they brought in, I think they all offer something. I think that, you know, we're going to discuss better in more detail in a second, but I think that they certainly add to the squad. I think if you ask me, is the squad stronger than it was at the end of last season? I potentially say no. just from the sheer fact that we've lost two decent centre halves, probably, you know, in Yerry Mina and Connor Cody, who would certainly improve the side that we've got at this moment in time. Alex Iwobi's gone, obviously. Damari Gray's gone. I think we potentially improved, or well, the striking area, yeah, we probably have, but I think the wide area is maybe balanced it out a little bit with Harrison and Dan Juma. But I think we are lacking in certain areas. And that's a concern. But what do you think, Pete? Do you think we've come out of the transfer window in a better state? Or do you think that, like I've just said, then I believe that currently, compared to what we had on that last game of the season, in terms of the squad, not those who were available and who weren't, do you think the squad is as strong as it was then?
I think we've come out of the window marginally better. And the reason I say marginally is again, probably because of Beto. And how, you know, how reliant we are on that profile of centre-forward to play the way we need to play. And as well, to be competitive in the Premier League. You know, we've said it many times on this podcast, you need a particular type of centre forward in order to have success in this league. And it seems like we've got someone that can not just back up Calvert-Lewin, but offer him competition and also hopefully allow, you know, Chimity to develop, and it takes a bit of pressure off him. So I do think there's lots of positives in that regard, but I completely agree with what you and Phil were just saying. We look very, very imbalanced in midfield. Phil referenced James Garner there, and you feel for him because I think James Garner's clearly a very talented football player, and I'd love to see him in a central midfield role just to see what he can do and how he develops for us. And it's not Dyche's system, but you know, you look how open we've been in midfield, and you can't help but think, you know, what would it be like if you kind of had him and Garner Gay alongside each other? Would it just give us a bit of protection? You've got two players then that can receive the ball and look up from defence, but you know, whether it's due to personnel or that imbalance, we might not be able to see that. But that, yeah, that right hand side, it's a real worry, isn't it? And like you were saying, Mike, if we do have people that can cover there, it feels like just that, you know, cover players having to adapt, whether it's, you know, James Garner or Dan Juma or Jack Harrison. It's not their natural position. It's not the best position. And that then makes you vulnerable, doesn't it? Not just from an attacking perspective, but you also reference Nathan Patterson, who's likely going to play more football than Seamus Coleman, we imagine, and he needs support. So if you have a player in front of him who's not a natural right-sided midfielder, again, you're just causing yourself unnecessary problems. And you look at the way that we started the season and the kind of lineage of the past 2 years, it's not good. And you know, maybe it's the wrong time to start launching a bit of an inquest to ask the questions of, you know, why has this happened again, when as a fan base it's so clear what we need. Why have we come out of another transfer window arguably weakened, but inarguably weaker in particular areas? You know, why would you let two wide players go in Alex Iwobi and Damari Gray and not get a single replacement? And you know, you just hope come January or you know, come like March, April time, we're not raking over this issue as it kind of defining our season and causing us lots of problems. But I think going back to what I said earlier, we're going to need a lot of luck with injuries, players staying fit and players being able to adapt. You know, let's hope we get to see Dan Juma on that right-hand side and he's, you know, he's just as capable as he is on the left. But I think we're in the territory of a lot of ifs, buts and maybes, when really what we need is much more certainty.
I was just thinking that. I've been thinking for a while, obviously since the break, and it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, when we obviously had Moyes and Phil Neville play right back and obviously Coleman played right side, could that potentially happen with Coleman and I.E. Patterson? Obviously, Coleman's still injured. But then thinking if it was sooner, could you not switch Young as a right back? And he's constantly in Patterson's ear. And then obviously Mikalenko yesterday against Saka as a left back. Just for that experience, just for that, because for me, Patterson, I just think his build, I think he looks very shy, he's very timid, and I think he's easy to get at, but maybe further forward with maybe an experienced guy behind him. Obviously, that assist he got for the equaliser, Sheffield United, he's obviously got that in his locker, and he does like to go up and down, so maybe that could be an option, because when McNeil came on against Sheffield United on the right hand side, I thought, oh, Lampard vibes kind of thing. Obviously, his best work's on the left, but obviously Dan Juma, the Fulham game, when he went through 1-1 and hit the post, obviously he scored in the Doncaster and the Sheffield United game. I do feel he's a real goal presence, Dan Juma. Different, a bit like a Kevin Morelos. I think he will get a, since Kevin Morelos, we haven't really had a winger who will notch up with goals and assists regularly. So I do feel he has to play, which then could leave McNeil, James Garner in that midfield, in the centre mid, like Pete said, as a six. And then maybe a Decore further back or Garner Gay. But just thinking what you thought of maybe passing higher up and maybe a Young or a Cole. Obviously, it's a bit too soon for Coleman, but similar reference to what happened with Phil Neville and Coleman, maybe.
I think it's just on the manager, really, isn't it? Because he seems to be a little bit reluctant in terms of, I say, putting players out of position. That's a lie, because he's done it quite often because he's had to. But I think he's also, when there's being calls, say, to play players in sort of alien positions. Probably the best example I've got is probably Michael Keane, when we said, well, why don't you give him a go? We're sure up top, we haven't got a striker. Why don't you give Michael Keane a go up there just for the sheer physical presence? We know we can strike a ball, we know we can head the ball. Maybe a little bit extreme, a little bit different. But, you know, it's for the mind, yeah. Unfortunately, it's what he's getting paid for, to find solutions to problems. And I wouldn't be averse to that. I mean, taking a little bit of defensive responsibility away from Patterson, it might not be a bad thing. Like you say, you've got that experience behind him in either Seamus Coleman or Ashley Young. I don't think Ashley Young's been great at left back, I've got to be honest. And I was satisfied with him coming in. And I know it's probably, it's not a sweeping statement, but he's struggled for me since the start of the season. And I'd be quite happy to throw Mikhailenko back in there, to be honest, especially with the Arsenal game coming up. I thought he was terrific against them last season at home in the 1-0 win. I thought he had a decent game yesterday, and people will say, obviously, he got caught out for the England goal, but I thought against Saka in particular, he was rough, wasn't he? Obviously, with Sunday's game in mind, he was leaving his foot in. He was giving him a little shove here and there. I thought he defended quite well. I wouldn't be averse to taking Ashley Young out of the equation at left-back and moving him over, but you know, it's, that right-hand side is going to cause issues for them, mind you. You know, we've seen the likes of, obviously, Lewis Dobbins come in. It's a struggle for him. You know, for me, the kid should have been loaned out, but because of the situation we find ourselves in, he wasn't. And it's not great, I don't think, for his development to be in and around the squad, but probably not getting a great deal of game time, to be honest. And I know the manager's spoken highly of him over the course of pre-season, but he needs to go and play regular first team football. Let's get it right in the Championship or in League One. And that's a real shame. But Lee's just come in into the call, and just I'll fire a question to you, Lee, if I can, before we move on to discuss Beto. We were just saying about the right hand side, and obviously the transfer window closed. We let Iwobi go, we let Damari Gray go. We now find ourselves with this little bit of an imbalance. A lot of left handed sided players, attacking wise, you know, whether it be Dan Juma, McNeil, Harrison, who prefers to play out there. The right hand side now seems to be very short on numbers, and we've already seen James Garner happen to play there. Lewis Dobbins being over there. What are your thoughts on going forward? Phil suggested potentially, you know, do you look to push Patterson up to play wide right and then bring in Seamus Coleman or put Ashley Young behind him at right back?
Yeah, we're basically like left wing FC at the minute, aren't we? With the amount of left mids we've got. You know my thoughts on it. I don't know what you think, Phil, but I was just devastated we couldn't get Nonto over the line, if I'm honest. Not because he's a right mid and we need a right mid. It's more about he's an exciting player to watch. You know what I mean? And he's I think he's got loads of potential. He's only 19. He's in the Italian international. You know, I saw enough of him.
Delafay vibes, Lee. A bit, wasn't it?
It's not a bad shout, actually. Yeah, just gets you off your seat type of player, you know what I mean? Just like runs at people. I think he was right up there in terms of number of dribbles, you know what I mean, in the league. You know, he squares up opponents. He's a bit of a throwback in that respect. But he's also got a goal in him as well. You know, he scored some in the time he had with Leeds when he played last season. I remember him scoring a great goal at Old Trafford after 2 minutes right in the bottom corner. He scored that worldie of a scissor kick for Leeds as well, didn't he? I think that was from a Harrison ball as well, actually. I was just gutted we couldn't get that over the line. And to be honest, Everton of a previous era, when we were a bit more awash with money, would have got that deal done. If you look at the Paddy's article in the week, I think overall we spent cash-wise €3 million. So I can guarantee you now we'd have gone over to Leeds hierarchy and said, well, look, we'll buy him, but can we stick like, you know, 500 grand up front, something stupid like that, probably. Do you know what I mean? And they were telling us where to go. But well, in answer to your question, it's a real problem. I don't think Garner, as much as I think, you know, I think there's real potential there with the lad, and he's got a lots of assets to his game. He's not a right mid, is he? He's just not a right mid. You know, I think the only asset he's got to his game that would suit him being right mid is that he's got a good delivery on him. You know, he can whip a ball, as he showed the other week when he put a great ball in that, Decore and he scored, and the keeper made a worldie of a save. But ultimately, no, I just think he's kind of wasted out there. And Iwobi, I said to you, Mike, before the night, he was almost guilty of his own work rate, the fact that he was shoved not only by this manager but other managers out to the right-hand side, because the fact they know he'll get up and down that touchline and he'll cover his fullback. You know, Garner, that side of the game doesn't really come naturally to him. I agree with Phil's point. I think that's a good shout, maybe, because Patterson's natural instinct is to drive with the ball and get forward, isn't it? He could work on his delivery. I think he's got the technique for a good ball, but he just doesn't always pull it off. You know what I mean? I know he put a great ball in for our goal to make it 2-2 against Sheffield United, but I mean, that's the only one I can think of off the top of my head. He's barely got any assists, doesn't he? He does get into some great positions, so that's not a bad shout. Then maybe play Young at right back, because we know he can cover both sides. Or even, potentially, because let's be honest, with Jimmy Garner's played pretty well at right back for England under 21, hasn't he? Do you know what I mean? So do you even reverse the roles there and say you drop back into right back because you're a bit more solid and you've obviously played, you know, you're probably better suited there than you are as being a right mid. And then Patterson, you push on. Maybe that's a shout. Maybe you have to look at that. The other thing for me, he definitely needs to do, he needs to find a way just to make us more solid, because at the moment, and, you know, I just think, I know Pete's mentioned this rightly a couple of times, we just look too easy to play through. You know, we know Garner's just not a natural six at all. You know, he's a great presser of the ball. He's one of the best in the league at tackling. You know, very, very rarely he goes to ground. He just reads the game brilliantly. But when he does go, he empties midfield, doesn't he, a lot of the time. And then suddenly we become massive gaps appear in midfield for teams to exploit. It's interesting. I watched Onana a little bit yesterday. He played six, didn't he, for Belgium, and sat in that role. So quite a lot of us as fans are kind of sort of baffled a little bit as why is Dyche not even, if he plays there for his international team, he's played there from the team we signed him from. Why is he playing further forward? Maybe there was an argument to say, okay, we needed a bit more height to support Mopé, but we don't need that now. So I just wish, I think Garner's more of a natural eight than he is a six. I just think we need to find a way. I think even, you mentioned, Pete, even possibility of playing him in a double six, maybe just to make us more solid, especially away from home or against someone like Arsenal, for example. There's just little conundrums I think he needs to do, you know, he needs to look at. And I think he has to start experimenting with it to try and get it right rather than persisting with it, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's got it. It's, as I said earlier on, it's his job. He's getting paid to sort these issues out and find solutions. Now, by the way, I'm not saying it's been easy for him. It's not. It's not been easy for Kevin Thelwell. But this is now, unfortunately, the hand that you've been dealt, and you've got to try and work through. And Arsenal's probably the ideal game. If you're going to look at playing a double six, which you're going to need that, obviously, that coverage, that extra little bit of solidity in the midfield and defensively, then that's the ideal time to do it. I mean, obviously, he can take a lot from the game he played against them for Sean Dyche's first game in charge, of course. He would have learned a lot from that game. But I mean, I don't want to dwell on, obviously, the negatives of the transfer window, but I think one real positive, and it's very, very early days, but I've fallen in love with him already. I expect Pete to be at the Arsenal game in a number 14 Beto shirt. And if he's not, I'd be very disappointed, because he's Pete's kind of player. Convinced of it. But Beto Pete, obviously, we've seen him for 45 minutes against Doncaster, scored a great goal, played the full 90 against Sheffield United as well. I thought he made a real impact for the first 60, I think fatigue took over. But what's been your impressions of that signing? You know, we've been crying out for a centre-forward, a striker in the mould of Dominic Calvert-Lewin for last couple of years now, maybe even longer. What's been your initial reaction to the signing and obviously his impact?
But probably the simplest and best way I could sum it up so far is you know he's on the pitch. That's the biggest compliment I could pay him. And I think that's why, regardless of his output in terms of goals and assists, he's got the potential to be loved by Evertonians. I think it's important we don't get carried away. I think based on what we've seen of him so far, you know he's on the pitch. You know he's in the team. He's a handful. He's a headache. He didn't get on the score sheet against Sheffield United, but he gave them a torrid time. He was so productive, and you know I was really impressed with how much he enabled us to link the play. You know, and how effective he was, particularly in the second half, helping us get up the pitch. So I think he's got real potential. But you know, he does the right things. He appears to understand the club. He, you know, he works hard. He's got lots of endeavour. The finish he scored against Doncaster was lovely. He was dead unlucky not to get the header. Seems to have potential for being a handful in the air, which again, you know, Evertonians are always going to love. We all like a headed goal and a striker that's competitive at corners. So I think the future's bright for Beto. I think it's important we don't load him with too much pressure. But like we were saying earlier, the fact that he's hopefully going to make up a trio in terms of being competitive for Calvert-Lewin and allowing Chimiti to develop, hopefully we'll get the best out of all three strikers. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how he does against Arsenal, because I think we'll find out a lot about him. It'll be, you know, his first home game, home debut, but against top quality opposition. So it'll be really interesting how he occupies the Arsenal centre halves, and you know, not to get carried away. I know we'll talk about it in a minute, but it could potentially work in our favour. You know, having a really energetic, unpredictable striker. Arsenal haven't encountered him before. Hopefully things could go our way.
And that's a good shout, that, Pete. I think there's been a lot of noise around Arsenal for Gabriel not starting the first few games, but then he played the last game and played very well against United. Handled that Hoyland well when he came on. Gabriel's the type of guy that loves the contact, doesn't he? He's a physical defender. He loves it. He's a big lad. So he'll meet his match there with Beto, I think. I think I could see that being a real intriguing battle, them two. Because one thing I've seen with Beto so far, as you've alluded to there, even in the small cameos he's had really with us so far, is amazing how quickly he seems to have adapted. You know what I mean? Because that's not easy coming from the Portuguese league. Okay, look, we're not getting carried away. Like you said, it's one and a half games, for God's sake. But you can see already, just pure physicality, he's gonna be a real handful. So that'll be an interesting battle. But also, what I like about him, you know, with a striker, you normally get one or the other. Phil, you'll know this as a manager yourself, mate. You normally get one or the other, don't you? You know, if you're a big lad, they're gonna hold the ball up, like you said, try and link up the play. You know, win your headers. You know, win your battles. But then when he opens his legs, he's quick.
Yeah, he is.
He's quick as well. You know, and okay, look, it's only Doncaster, we say that. But look, let's have it right. We were playing, that's probably one of the worst first halves of football I've ever seen Everton play, that first half. And obviously, fair play to Dyche. He's not known for his subs, but he changed it. And, you know, and he transformed the game on as well. Him and Garner really transformed the game on their own, those two. But if you look at the goal, you know, the finish, for me, the run's probably better than the finish. Yeah, it's a great run, and fair play to Decore, he spotted him, you know, and it's a perfect pass. But the speed of the lad once he opens his legs to someone who's 6'4" and probably at least 15 stone plus, you know what I mean? He's a big lad, so fair play. I mean, that really surprised me, that. And if you've got a striker that can do that, where they can run in behind and stretch and run the channels and be an absolute pain in the arse, and then at the same time, you know, okay, you're going to play it into my feet, or you're going to play it in the air, I'm going to battle with you there as well. That's impressive for me.
Do you know, he reminds me, and he honestly reminds you of Mikel Antonio. Good, honest build. And I think we were linked with him, whether that was true or not. And I just think he's unselfish in his runs, as Lee and Pete have alluded to. He's big and strong, which will allow these technical players, i.e. your McNeils, you know, your Dan Juma's, your Jack Harrison's to get them in that space, because those lads will have a shot as well. It would have been great for Iwobi to have played them, to be fair, but it does remind me of the mould of Mikel Antonio. I know people say, you know, I'm not expecting to get 15, 20 goals, but he'll work his plums off, you know, in every single game he'll play in. You won't see him, you know, when the Glover Street screaming for him to close down. He will run every blade of grass, and I think, again, in that mould of Mikel Antonio, there won't be many defenders who want to play against him. I think he's quite unorthodox as well, like Lee said. He's got a bit of pace about him. He can go off the left, he can go off the right. You know, people double up on him, which will allow more space for the midfielders than the knockdowns.
Yeah, and he's not your classic. When you think of Portuguese centre-forwards or forward players in general, you think of, like, silky players, don't you? Yeah, I mean, you think of players who've got a lovely first touch and, you know, you say almost say classic continental style players. He's not that, is he? Yeah, I mean, he's almost like, he's, Antonio's a very good shout, actually, in the fact that, you know, his goal scoring record suggests he's not mega prolific, but at the same time, he's a player that's easy to love if you're a fan, isn't it? Because that's what fans want, ultimately. Look, if you've got loads of ability, then fair enough. You know, I mean, you could say Lukaku, for example. Was he ever really, truly loved? I think by a lot of Evertonians he was, but by a big chunk, he wasn't, was he? Because, some people thought he was lazy. Do you know what I mean? And he didn't put a shift in. It's interesting, you know. Go on.
Sorry, Lee. He's even come out and said, listen, I can't promise goals, but I'll give everything. And in the 1.5 games you've seen of him, that's exactly that. What you see is what you get. And he just looks like an honest professional. He loves being. He's been obviously given this opportunity. And I think, you know, the old Moyes days, the big teams, I think the crowd will really take to him, especially at Goodison.
He's certainly a player that we can feed off, and he can feed off us. I mean, watching him, you know, great finish against Doncaster, great run, as we said, and he opened up, as I say, he's got a big long stride, and it was a lovely finish. Let's get it right. The header was terrific. He was probably in line with, if not above, the crossbar. That's how high he got up. But what impressed me against Sheffield United in particular, he's a bit of a triple threat, really, isn't he? In terms of he's good in the air, he's got that bit of pace more than you think, and also he's good with the ball at his feet. He completed the most take-ons of any player in the Premier League this season. In that game, it was 6 in total. Shows you what he's all about. You know, he's not averse to give me the ball at my feet and I'll go at you. That one in particular where he went at them, didn't he? Beat a couple on the edge of the box. As he got to the byline, he chopped back, didn't he? And sort of went to put the ball across and he won a corner. He's got it in his locker. And I think that he's a little bit unorthodox. I think at times he looks a little bit maybe ungainly. That's just the way I think that he runs. But in terms of, you know, watching clips of Udinese, looking at what I've seen so far, that's an Everton striker for me. That's an Everton striker, you know, and you can, okay, we've had better strikers, and those are only early days, but Lukaku probably was a better striker, the best I've seen in probably my time. Yakubu runs him close. I think Yakubu was terrific, different kind of striker again. But this lad, probably most importantly, will take the pressure off Dominic Calvert-Lewin, which is so important. We said, didn't we, before we signed him, and we were linked to Che Adams, obviously Mikel Antonio was mentioned as well, and Beto's been in the conversation for about 6 or 7 months now. We looked at him and thought, you know what, he's got the attributes to really be a like for like, but even he differs from Dom in the sense that, you know, he's probably better in terms of running with the ball, to be honest. You know, Dom very much has played his best football when Ancelotti had him playing literally within 6 yards to 10 yards out. That's where you need to be as a striker. He's a little bit different again. And if it takes the pressure off Calvert-Lewin, which it does, then it's a win-win. And, you know, okay, it wasn't the cheapest of deals, but it was a great deal that we actually got done in terms of not paying anything at this moment in time. And like you say, his attitude is very much a case of, I work my backside off every single time that I play. His fitness will obviously, when he gets up to speed with the Premier League, as I say, he got very tired, I thought, after an hour against Sheffield United. Big game against Arsenal coming up against a top-class opposition. We'll see what he's all about then on his home debut. But he's only going to get better and better and better. And I'm really, like Pete said, I'm really excited to see him in the flesh come Sunday at Goodison.
That's a really good shout there. I think all of us can agree he looks like an Everton number nine, doesn't he? I mean, fair play. And massive kudos to Thelwell. I don't know how on earth, sitting around the table, he's managed to convince them to say, tell you what we'll do, we won't give you anything for 12 months. Yeah, but then we'll pay you X or whatever. So, you know what I mean? I mean, something's happened now. He's managed to do that, because that's miraculous how he's managed to get away with that. But anyway, look, he looked, you know, Shea Adams, let's be fair, we all know Shea Adams, again, an honest pro and whatever, but let's be honest, he wouldn't have excited us as a fan base, you know what I mean, at all. And this lad's come in now, and, you know, good age as well. In today's football, you'd almost say it's comparatively cheap. Okay, but look, again, look, we don't know, but strikers are a premium these days regardless. You know what I mean? You know, we know how hard it is for clubs to sign centre-forwards. Plus, you've got the Premier League tax added onto it as well, the fact they come into the Premier League and we're awash with money and everything else. Well, everyone else is apart from us. But the point I'm saying is it'd be interesting for me. It would be very interesting at some point whether Dyche plays him and Dom. Now, you said, Mike, there, it will take the pressure off. And it will, because Dom always knew that whenever he was fit, he was going to come straight in the team. I like the fact now that he's going to be going, I'm going to have to fight for my place here now. If he's going to carry on playing one up front, I would have walked in before because he had Neil Mopay in there who couldn't hit a barn door. And then all of a sudden you've got, you know, this fella now that's genuinely competing me for my place here. So that is a good thing, because in Dom's head, as we know, in any sport, competition is good. Competition for places is good because it raises standards. And, you know, I wonder if he'll be tempted at any stage, whether he starts, you know, I can see it happening on occasion when we need a goal, he might go, right, let's stick them both on, for example. I wonder if at any point he might start with the two of them and then we might end up with a, you know, a 4-4-2 or something like that. I mean, that would be interesting, because can you imagine those two? Yeah, any set pieces, anything, yeah, any sort of decent delivery from out wide with them two attacking the ball. I mean, that would be a proper throwback, wouldn't it? Two big fellas who are class in the air. I mean, that'd be really. I don't know what you boys think. Do you think he'd ever go with playing both of them up top at any point?
I think we'd lose all our games about 8-9-4.
As long as it was four headers, though, Pete. That's all that matters. Yeah, yeah.
That's the only problem, isn't it? It's obviously when you put two up front, you take out whatever maybe defensive solidity or solidity we've got in the midfield out. Obviously, because we take away, say, a Decore, for example, or an Onana. But I think, you know, if we're chasing the game, then you're going to see it, aren't you? You know, because we've seen at times where Mopay's being brought on to play alongside Calvert-Lewin. So we'll see it, of course, and that'll be interesting, you know, to see the two of them, because they will cause problems. You know, they will occupy the centre-halves, make no mistake about that, and that'll create more space. And, you know, the two of them are very, very physical. Beto in particular, you know, he's an absolute user of a man. He's, I mean, how his shirt is baggy on him, I've got no idea. It must be about a triple XL shirt, because he's absolutely massive. So he must like to have a baggy shirt, because I can't understand that myself. But he's going to cause problems, and hopefully, like we said, you know, if we ever see the two up top, the two of them are going to be, you know, something in the mould of Shearer and Sutton. That's what it's going to be like a throwback at MC. And if we get anything like their return, we'll be doing okay. But it's, I think it's, you know, he brought a bit of excitement, didn't he, for us in terms of a signer, because we've been crying out for that kind of signing for such a long time.
Can I also mention as well, I've been steadily more and more impressed with Dan Juma as he's got a bit fitter as well. He looks fitter now. He looks sharper. Again, look, it's early doors, so you can't say too much, but the link-up play between the two of them already looks like, you know, there could be a partnership there. I know Dan Juma likes to play off the left. You can see already he prefers, you know, that's definitely his position, can't you? Almost a bit like Richarlison in that respect. You know, he likes to come off that side. We all know Richie's having his woes at the Spurs. Everton fans are doing their best on social media to try and get him to come home. Paul Ladd was upset the other night against Bolivia, won he for Brazil. But yeah, you know, Dan Juma, massive kudos to him so far. As he's got fitter, he looks like he's got goals in him, doesn't he? I mean, you know, again, he's not going to score you 20, but looking at him so far, if he stays fit and he gets a regular run in this team, I can see Dan Juma getting, personally, 10 to 15 goals in this side.
Well, you spot, I said maybe before you came on, Lee, reminds you very much of, we haven't had a winger since him, since Morelos, you know, like, yeah. Again, going through one-on-one with Fulham, right, at the post, maybe he should have done better. He was playing up front then, but, and then the Doncaster, and then obviously Chef U. I think he has to start, me personally, and it's tough because I think how well McNeil did last year, where would he play? And that it's interesting because I do believe Dan Juma, I think he'll be a huge, and again, it's only a couple of games, but I think he'll be a huge threat now. He's getting fitter, and like you said, the link-up, he has had with certain players. He looks good, I think. I think he's got a bit of everything, Dan Juma.
Yeah, I think what he's shown, and well, I think we said it at the time, you know, we needed a little bit of time to get up to speed. I mean, Sean Dyche mentioned on quite a few occasions that he wasn't quite at the races just yet in terms of fitness. Got a bit of a knock, didn't he, and things like that, worked his way back. But he certainly, from a fitness perspective, he certainly looked a lot more at the races. And someone said to me at our time against Sheffield United, I was in a bar and over in Grand Canarian, by the way, it was no easier watching Everton in the sun in a bar than it was sitting watching them in the ground, to be honest with you. But someone mentioned Dan Juma, I was, maybe, you know, take him off. I said he's got a goal in him. I said, you know, he's got a goal in him. He scored, obviously, he got his goal against Doncaster. And I know we can be a bit frustrating, but he always wants to be involved. He seems like quite a selfish player in terms of if it's an option between having a shot or passing the ball, he'll have a shot. So that can be a good and a bad thing. But since he's got a goal in him, since you know he's got that instinct, and you know, quite quickly after the restart, he gets his goal. But he's going to be a really important player. And that's the thing at the moment, you know, with McNeil just coming back from injury, the chances are you can get him out there because you know he'll cut back on his right foot. He'll shoot from, say, you know, 18 yards, 20 yards out. He'll cut back inside and bring other players in. He's got that bit of pace, so he's certainly a player that I don't think we can really afford to just drop at this moment in time, or even put him to the right-hand side, keep him with what he knows best and where he's most effective. You know, I've said it already, I saw him at Stoke in pre-season playing centrally, and I thought he struggled because he wanted to go left all the time and stay on the left-hand side. So playing where he should be getting played and where he's most effective and where he's going to be more of a goal threat, and that's on the left-hand side.
If you look at that goal against Sheffield United, you look at it closely. Obviously, it's a good, you know, it's good link-up play by Better. The ball falls to him. He lays it out to Patterson. Like I said, you know, the cross makes the goal for me. Obviously, it's a hell of a cross. But if you look at it very carefully, both Onana and Dan Juma, I think I said this to you, Mike, didn't I? Are drifting into the box and making effectively the same run, if you like, you know, the back post run. But if you look at the difference between the two. If you look at Onana, I think before it goes out to Patterson, is ahead of Dan Juma in terms of being further forward. Then if you look at Dan Juma, he busts the gut to get into that position. Now, obviously, he nearly went offside. He just stayed onside. But the difference is, like, Onana just sort of ambled into that area. Now, I can guarantee you this time last season, if that ball would have been whipped in by Patterson, Onana would have been 5 yards behind the play and it would have just run out for a throw-in on the other side. Do you know what I mean? The difference is, you watch him, he sees the play opening up in front of him, and as soon as it's laid out to Patterson, he's on his bike, he's gone. He's sprinting into that space, going like, as if, like, what, saying to Patterson, pick me out, I'm here. You know what I mean? Which makes the cross a bit easier because you can obviously see him, but it's a hell of a cross, like I said, and I can guarantee it right now. This time last year, we'd have been ruined that as being another ball in and no one being in the box. You know what I mean? But he was in there, and you know, the finish was basically as easy as you like then once he'd made the run, and the quality was so good on the delivery.
Yeah, he's got that instinct, hasn't he, which is what we need from our wide players, because the concentration for goals has always been, that's why we've had so much pressure on Calvert-Lewin, is for him to be back and him to be scoring goals. We've got to have more goals from our attacking players, you know, left and right, and also Decore needs to chip in with more goals than he got last season as well. So we do need that. So he's been a real positive. Obviously, the Beto signings are a real positive. But just to wrap up the transfer side of things and the squad assessment, the Damari Gray situation in terms of when the transfer window closed, Sean Dyche said, you know, he's going to be back with the squad. We're getting back up to speed. And all eyes were then on looking ahead to Arsenal and potentially having Damari Gray back into the squad. And obviously, Damari Gray responds basically saying, the manager showed me no respect at all. Conflicting stories. I think the general consensus is Damari Gray basically said he was sorting his own transfer out. He asked to work away from the rest of the squad. I don't think Sean Dyche was too pleased by that. And we found ourselves in a situation where you've got a player who quite clearly then wants out. We've got a manager who then probably loses respect for the player because, you know, he said he's trying to sort out his own transfer. And as Sean Dyche said in his response as well, you know, no one goes anywhere from this club unless we say so. But we found ourselves then, you know, selling him after our transfer window were closed. Obviously, he signed for Steven Gerrard's club over in Saudi Arabia. Pete, are you disappointed with the way that, one, it played out? Obviously, it was so public and you never like to see that kind of negativity around your club anyway. But two, the fact that we've lost a player who you mentioned earlier on, you know, he can bring something to the table, especially in such a goal-shy side.
Yeah, it's absolutely disappointing on several fronts, isn't it? Firstly, the last thing we need at the moment is anything that destabilises the squad or causes fallouts, you know, or takes attention away from football. I know we hate getting drawn into this stuff on the podcast, but, you know, screenshots start flying around that, you know, certain players have unfollowed Damari Gray on social media and all of this. But all of this kind of noise and speculation just adds pressure onto the squad and onto the team, and it's just so unnecessary. I know it's part of the modern time now that, you know, every single thing is under massive scrutiny, but it feels unhelpful, you know, particularly given the situation we're in at the moment. We need, you know, we need unity amongst the team, especially when there's been so much that's been documented at other levels of the club. And then, yeah, going back to what I was saying earlier, I think it could be a big loss for us, this Damari Gray. He can be such a productive attacking player for us. And, you know, we've spoken so much today and in the previous podcast about balance and players being square pegs in round holes. And I just worried that we could end up suffering losing both him and Alex Iwobi. He scored such important goals for us, and, you know, regardless of what you think about his defensive output or what Sean Dyche thinks about his defensive output or how much of a team player he is, he's one of the few players we had who had the quality to get a goal out of nothing. You know, he's done it several times for us. He scored so many important goals. You know, I know that the Manchester City goal, the Arsenal goal, and I mentioned from previous seasons earlier on, a kind of some of his top strikes, if you like. But he's done it several times for us, and I don't know if we've got anyone else like that in the team. So I do think it weakens us, and I do think it's slightly sour the way he's gone. We've got to move on now, but I just hope we don't find ourselves talking about this in January and beyond January that, you know, this has been something that's cost us.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I don't think, from the outside looking in, we don't know the full story, but we can sort of put the pieces together. I just don't think we've handled it at all well. I mean, the club obviously thought in the head, look, we're going to get a right-sided player regardless. The fact they gave Jack Harrison his number as well is a bit disrespectful as well. Now, look, okay, but Damari's, if he said what he said and Dyche has come out and said that, Dyche's remit now is definitely, isn't it? I'm going to be honest with the fans. I'm going to tell them exactly how it is. Should he be the one having to come out and say all that? Probably not. Would I like to see these things handled behind closed doors? Probably yes. You know what I mean? Because although you admire his honesty, it's kind of like, yeah, well, clearly, you know, there's been a confrontation between the two of them. And, you know, whether Dyche has almost said, look, I don't see you in my plans. Look, Dyche has shown that without telling him, didn't he, at the end of last season. you know, he wasn't getting the game from being one of our most important players in a lot of games. There's quite a lot of times, let's be fair, with Damari, where we were asking him to play up front at times last season, and he was having to do a job for us. And you know what? He did as best as he could. And at times, let's be honest, as fans, we were calling out for him to play up front than Mope. He was a striker because he's so quick. And that goal against City will stick in my head, and the one against Arsenal will as well. I mean, both, like Pete said, absolute worldies. And he had that in his locker. He's such a strange player because loads of ability, great feet, you know, quick as well. You know what I mean? Especially against, you know, you saw him in some of the cup games. He'd take the mick out of some teams because he was that much quicker. And, you know, as I said, his feet were that quick as well. So, yeah, sad to see him going in circumstances because obviously he would have given us that cover on the right-hand side as well. And Dice even alluded to, didn't he? Oh, yeah, we've got Damari, you know, Demi's coming back after the Sheffield United game. And then obviously then we know what happened next. So, and I just want to give a shout out to Iwobi as well, because I know some fans have basically said up yours, see you later, you know, your output's been garbage. But, you know, overall, I'd say, and credit where it's due, he's given his all for us since he's been with us. You know what I mean? And he's had some indifferent times with us as well. You know, I'd say we probably played our best football under the first half of the season against Carlo. And, you know, he probably would have enjoyed that more than any other time. Let's be honest, the last 2 years, if you're a footballer for Everton, has not been enjoyable, really. You know what I mean? It's been stressful. And I think, you know what? He's not signed a new contract. He's gone back to London where he's from. I don't think you can begrudge him that, in all fairness. And we've got a good fee for him as well. Last year of his contract, 22 million, purported to be 22 million. I mean, that tells you if he's going with a 5-year contract behind him, he's more like 40 plus then, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? So, good deal that we've got there. We probably couldn't say no to that for that sort of money for a player that would have gone on the free and could have signed a contract in January, couldn't he? He could have signed a pre-contract in January. But you know what? You know, hats off to him and credit where it's due. You know, the stats tell it all as well in terms of his progressive passes, his chances created, his work rate was phenomenal. Yes, he probably could have chipped in with more actual assists and goals. We all know that. But let's be honest, it's been a poor team, especially the last 2 years. It struggled to score goals. And, you know, as I said, I take my hat off to him, wish him all the best. And, you know, I'll always remember that Newcastle goal because that was a huge, huge moment in us staying in the Premier League the season before last.
Yeah, but Alex, we said earlier on the show, you know, he massively divides opinion. But I've always said, if you have better players around him, you'd probably come out with double figures in assists for most seasons that he was here, to be honest with you. I think sometimes he was probably two steps ahead of other players around him, you know. I do understand why people saw him as a frustrating player and felt that he didn't contribute enough. If you know, if you look at the eye test, so to speak, and don't look at the figures behind, you know, the performances, then it's easy to make that judgment. But sometimes some players are just ideal to be the whipping boy, aren't they? You know, and we know how many of those have come and gone over the course of the last few years, and he was one. But me personally, yeah, that, I mean, it's a great price. Last year, because it's a fantastic deal. Everton have had to do it. I think it made sense to do it, but I think we will miss him. It's most definitely he will be missed, as we've, you know, discussed already. But Phil, just your thoughts on the Damari Gray very, very quickly before we look ahead to the Arsenal game. When you see this kind of soap opera played out in public, it's never a good thing. But do you think that there was literally no return for him and there was no way back? And once we see the Instagram post and once we see and hear that the Sean Dyche response, there was never any kind of chance of any kind of reconciliation.
Yeah, we're in a little football group on the WhatsApp, and when the English, you know, the transfer window shut, I said, don't be surprised if Damari Gray goes, and they said, don't be stupid. Obviously, we've sold X, Y, and Z. And I said, well, at the start of the day, I said, what business that was for Iwobi. You know, last year his contract, the fee we got, And then obviously it ended quite sour that we didn't bring anyone in. So they were quite like, no, Gray can't go. But I said, watch this space, money talk kind of thing. Alluding to what you said there about both of them, I just think, and you could say this about a lot of the players we have, I think they're the right players, but in the wrong era for Everton. Let's say it right. You know, Iwobi was never wanted by Everton. It was always Wilfred Zaha. That was the soundbite all summer, that summer. We ended up getting Iwobi. I personally think we've never played in the right position. I don't think he's ever, or hardly ever in his Everton career, been injured. He's played every minute. And I remember always saying a couple of years ago, if Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison don't score, who does score? Obviously, we saw Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin. We know the story there. So it's put a lot of pressure on the likes of Demarai Gray and Iwobi to chip in with goals, assists, because obviously, you know, we've had Tom Davises, Gomez's, Garner Gaze. These type of players don't chip in with any goals, and centre-halves and defenders, apart from Yerry Mina, was the only one who was. Obviously, Baines and Coleman coming to an age, they were chipping in with a lot of goals back in the day. So it did put a lot of pressure on Gray and Iwobi. And I do believe they were in the wrong period, wrong time of Everton. As you say, Mike, I always thought he would go because I thought how it was ended, and like Lee alluded, it was done really unprofessionally. It was almost like, I want the last say. Gray tried to, I think Gray's actually had the last say, hasn't he, saying on his Instagram post, saying a match fit. After Dyche come out to all the Evertonians to say, you know, why he sold them. But I again, I know Pete's a big fan of Demarai Gray. I've always been on the fence with him. I think with the price tag, what he did for Everton was fantastic. I always thought you just want to shake him because there's just more in him. You know, the goals, as Lee said, you know, Arsenal, Manchester City, we didn't see it often enough, and he should have with his ability, the raw pace, you know, very direct, the skill he had. But I do believe with them both going, and obviously the whole podcast today was, we're left short, but unprofessional by the club, but I always thought he would move just because I just think money talks. And like you said, Mike, I don't think there'll be a lot of movement in the January.
I think personally, I mean, the club clearly, once those two were going, clearly went in for Nonto, didn't they? Back in for him. By all accounts, Leeds have come out and said, was it up to 25 was the maximum bid that Everton offered, which I think, to be fair, you know, depending obviously how it's structured, is a really good offer for him. You know, I mean, 25 million is a lot. I know he's only 19, but he's still very much unproven, Nonto. So I'm surprised Lee didn't take that, if I'm honest. I know they've made a few quid from other signings as well. I mean, Nonto will learn and his agent will learn that, you know, if next time he signs a contract, there'll be a release clause in it. You know what I mean? Because if he'd have done that, we'd have probably got it done. I know Adams did, didn't he? And Adams got his move away from Leeds because of the release clause. So, but yeah, so going back to your point there, for his price tag, mate, yeah, 100%. Gray has been, you know, considering what we 1.5, was it 1.5 million, something like that? 1.7, which is, you know, ridiculous. But I do agree with you. He flatters to the deceive a lot. You know, for his ability, again, almost similar to Iwobi, should probably be posting much stronger numbers and having bigger impacts on games for the ability that they both have. But like I said before, look, we've got the cash in. I can't see, I don't know what you said before, Mike, it wasn't on it initially. I can't see us not trying to address that right-hand side in January. I'd be very surprised now if Thelwell isn't even trying to make, yeah, obviously, well, he'll already have a list anyway, but whether those sort of lines are being opened already to try and bring someone in January, because surely to God, I know a lot of the money has gone on, and I read recently in Paddy's article, we've made a profit the last three windows. Yeah, which is trying to survive in this Premier League when you're making a profit, a net profit on player sales and player incomings is unbelievable. I mean, it's just unheard of. I mean, it's like League One spending and trying to stay in the Premier League. You know what I mean? Let's be honest, it is, isn't it? Yeah, you know, even Bournemouth spent 107 million.
The Nonto business stinks for me, absolutely stinks, because, you know, Leeds repeatedly came out and said, player's not for sale. So, number one, why did we apparently persist with it? And number two, if we've got 25 million to throw at Nonto, why haven't we brought someone in? I'm not saying why haven't we spent 20, 25 million, but why haven't we brought anybody in? You know, like you were saying, Lee, presumably there'd be a shortlist. Fair enough, Nonto might be top of that. But why have we not followed, you know, followed a recruitment strategy? And, you know, I don't want to buy into paranoia or fan conspiracy, but you can't blame fans for, you know, questioning whether some of these stories or rumours are even legitimate, because it just doesn't make sense to me.
I think, but from what I heard, Pete, is that, I mean, Sulemana, there was a lot of noise around him. From what I'd heard that was genuine. And with Sulemana in particular, I think they were 1 in 30. I think that was his buyout clause at Sandton, 30 million. I think ultimately the club felt, for whatever reason, they didn't think he was worth that. I mean, he'd come to Southampton with a real pedigree, and let's be honest, he didn't really do anything with them. So
fair enough, but somebody's worth it, aren't they?
Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
25 million, but if we're mixing in those circles for those kind of figures for, you know, wingers with potential, why have we not brought somebody in? You know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
But you've also got Sinisterra as well, isn't he? Another guy who's also ironically at Leeds, and that sort of mould of someone being, you know. Because let's be honest, what we want is not just a right winger. We want, for me, a goal-scoring right winger with pace who's also got a good delivery. Now, and I know that's not asking for much, but you know what I mean? But, I mean, yeah, nowadays, let's be honest, a lot of the top sides, a lot of the goals don't necessarily come through the middle, do they? A lot of them do come from, you know, a lot of teams, you know, having almost like wide forwards, they call them nowadays, don't they? Do you know what I mean? So, let's see. I just can't see us not. We're literally an injury or two away from a crisis in certain positions now, aren't we? And that's what's worrying. And our injury record over the last few years has not exactly been golden. So, the Wolves will be at the door if we lose a couple of key players. Now, it looks like we're all right at centre forward finally. We look like a team now that's got a few goals and is providing those guys stay fit. But, you know, we're now suddenly very short in a few other areas. And suddenly now, even at fullback, we look weak again. Yeah, I think I said a stat the other day. Didn't Luca Dean have? He's had 5 assists already this season. I think that's more than Patterson and Mikulenko combined since we did the sign. Since they went to Villa and we signed both of them. Madness.
Just going to the topic, kind of similar to what you're saying with our crisis. Do you think that took a lot of pressure off Sean Dyche then? Just for argument's sake, say we do lose to Arsenal. You know, Brentford away is not an easy game. And you're playing Luton. Just so we managed to get 1 point out of those 3 games. Do you think the fans will still be happy with that? Or, you know, will they stick with what's gone on? And obviously, I think people mentioning protests about the transfers. But do you believe then the club will stick with Dyche? As in, like, I know we're going totally off topic, but just talk about the transfer situation with not many bodies coming in. All right, on the last day. But and there's so much injuries and things, and like we don't know how Harrison will come back in. You know, obviously Coleman's getting older, he's another one we're relying on, but arguably been one of our best defenders the last 18 to 2 years. It's just a worrying time of we play well, but it's not just about playing well, you obviously need those points. And the, you know, in history gone by, we've had great results against Arsenal. Doesn't mean it's going to happen again. Brentford away, tough place to go, and obviously Luton, it's a bit of a wild card. No one knows really with them, although, you know, batting themselves into the Premier League. It just worries me then what could happen.
That's a really good shout, Phil. I think, let's be honest, we're massive underdogs against Arsenal, regardless of record or not, because Arsenal have been very, very good the last 2 seasons, last season in particular. Brentford have started the league one of the best so far this season. I think they're top behind, oh, sorry, the second behind City for XG, I think, so far. You know, so that's without Ivan Toney as well. You know, they've been playing, obviously, Wissa and Mbeumo up front, and Mbeumo's been brilliant this season so far. You know, everyone thought they were going to struggle without Toney, but they're clearly showing they're not. And Brentford, for me, are always a hot and cold team. You know, they can go through real hot streaks and then they can really fade away. You know, we played them, you know, I think I remember playing them, was it last year or the year before, and they were on a massive losing run, weren't they? Where they could barely win a game. And at the moment now, you know, they look ridiculously good. It's probably the worst time to play them. So conceivably, really, you raise a good point there. We could conceivably be still on 1 point after 6 games. And then suddenly all the pressure starts going on the manager again, and then we end up in that cycle and over again. If we've made the call on Dyche now, I just don't want us to be in December, January again looking to find another manager. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah, I think obviously, without sort of going too deep into that, I think that, you know, from a financial perspective, it's another payoff, isn't it? So probably the club probably can't even afford another managerial payoff, to be honest. So I think that will come into things. I think that if you're still on 1 point after six games, I don't think that'll be the end of the world. I think the Luton game certainly comes into play. Luton and Bournemouth are home back-to-back. You've got to be looking to get at least 4 points there. So I think they will potentially, you know, questions will then be asked. But I think it's a little premature at the moment. But most definitely those games, Luton and Bournemouth, are the key for me. Because rightly so, you can play well all you want, but if you're not getting points, it means absolutely nothing at all. And that's the big concern, isn't it? But we're going to round off with a little bit of a chat, if we can, on the Arsenal game. And Pete, I'll come to you first. Arsenal, obviously, unbeaten so far this season. Great win against United late on, 3-1 in the last Premier League game. They bought Declan Rice. They look pretty stronger than last season. Do you go into that game with much hope at all that we can pick anything up?
Like Phil was just saying, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you look at the start we've had to the season and the position we're in, you think, look, this is like an absolute nightmare fixture. Because it tends to be one or the other with Arsenal. Either they absolutely batter us or we beat them. So I wouldn't put it past Everton to win this 1-0. You know, Bear Peter Goodison, Beto's home debut. Try not to get carried away, but I do think potentially it's lined up for it to be a season-defining game. And, you know, hopefully we stop the rot against Sheffield United and we can use that as a bit of a foundation to go into the Arsenal game and be even more organised, competitive, more togetherness and more identity and balance. But, I do think it could go the other way as well. I think for us to get anything out of this game, we need to try and recreate the Everton we were in Sean Dyche's first game. I know I in particular keep going back to that game, but it was such a brilliant performance, and it was like a blueprint of what Everton should be for me. Just the performance had everything. I know it was only a 1-0 win, but I think, you know, what it represented and how well we played, it just had everything for me. So I'd like to see something like that again, something closer to that in terms of how we set out and how we play as a team and how we incorporate Beto. I do think potentially it's all laid out for us, but it's whether we're in a position to be able to take it.
I think I'm just talking about Beto. Just there's a clip going around of his performance against Sheffield United. It reminds me of the prime Brazilian Ronaldo, without going too over the top there. So we can't, like you say, his debut at Goodison Park, home debut, it's going to be something to behold. And I say this obviously a little bit tongue in cheek, but it will raise the atmosphere straight away. The fact that we've seen what he's all about in such a short space of time, we know exactly what his attitude is towards obviously playing for this football club, what he brings to this side already. The fact that, you know, we could be going to the game with him starting and Calvert-Lewin on the bench. He's back in training by all accounts, Calvert-Lewin, which is great to see. You know, you've got Dom, you've got the likes of Chimiti, who's learning all the time. Dwight McNeil's going to be back as well. So it's going to be, I think, from an atmosphere perspective, I think it's going to be raised automatically, just having a new striker, someone we're seeing for the first time, someone who's made a really good impression. And, you know, we saw it in Sean Dyche's first game. Sometimes you just need someone to sort of light the touch paper. And that was obviously Sean Dyche in his first game. The fact that we changed manager, it was a clean slate. We had, you know, at the time, top of the table came to Goodison Park. We were, you know, we weren't given a hope in hell. And nothing's changed. You know, we've got Arsenal coming into town again. They started the season really strongly. As I say, they're unbeaten in the Premier League so far. It's going to be a really, really tough game. Of course it is. You know, of course it's going to be a tough game. It was a tough game against them in February. It'll be exactly the same again. But there's no reason why we can't go into that game, be competitive, do the basics right, you know, be a real threat from set pieces, which is what we did in that game against them in February as well. And we've got to go in there, with a bit of hope. It's still early on in the season. We're only four games in. Got our first points against Sheffield United. Got our first win against Doncaster. Little steps. You know, we've had a bit more time now. Sean Dyche has had 2 weeks, or we'll have 2 weeks before the game, to work with a lot of these players. A lot of the first team players are still floating around Finch Farm. Beto's there, which are doing the world of good. Obviously, Dominic Calvert-Lewin back training. Dwight McNeil's there, Godfrey, Decore, Dan Juma. A lot of players who are going to play a big part in that game against Arsenal are still at Finch Farm. So these 2 weeks he's had to work with those players, I think, is really, really important. But I go in there with quite a bit of hope that we are going to see a good Everton performance. And the fact, I'm quite happy in a way, Phil, the fact that it is Arsenal and it's not international break. We've got 1 point. We come back against, say, with all due respect, a Luton, for example, where you're expected to win. I would rather come back off international break against a side who have been flying high. Their momentum has been interrupted. Our lack of momentum has been interrupted. And that can always play into your hands, can't it?
No, spot on, Mike. And funny enough, as stupid as this sounds, I'm actually made up Arsenal beat Man United because obviously they drew with Fulham the game before. And obviously, if they drew with Man United again, it's almost like, you know, they've had a frustrating start. And obviously their expectations of maintaining the title charge again. So obviously with them winning, it almost, I'm quite pleased with that because that kind of relaxes it as well. And like, because with the international break being interrupted in their progress. But listen, Arteta played obviously for us, and he'll know how important Goodison Park is to have it in gaining points. And, you know, he'll try and quieten us down as much as we can. He'll know the hype of obviously Beto and the lack of points we've had and what the crowd can do at Goodison. So he'll be fully aware of that. But he's obviously struggled since he's gone back as a player and as a manager at Goodison Park. But no, I'm confident, Mike, to be fair. I think you can always get at Arsenal. Obviously, they seem to be a bit more leaky this year regarding goals and things. And I do believe you can always get at Arsenal. I'm glad it's not like one of the other big boys. But no, I always back ourselves. Any home game, really. Obviously, my heart rules my head. But no, I'm excited for the game. And obviously, I think everyone will be well up from the seats to the players.
Yeah, and we've got obviously the players have got to feed off the fans, but the players have got to give the fans something to feed off as well. It goes hand in hand. But when these kind of sides roll into town, you know, we don't need any kind of excuse to really back the players. And as I say, for the reasons mentioned, that I do go to Goodison Park next Sunday with a bit of hope, thinking that we can get something from this game. And I think, you know, even a point from the game would be a real positive. You know, the fact that you're going toe-to-toe against probably the second-best side in the country, only really City, you can better them, in my opinion. And, you know, a side who have had the same mind, yeah, for a number of years, they've stuck with them, they've certainly grown. They're now a real threat in terms of winning trophies and threatening the stranglehold that Man City have got on the Premier League. So I think it's going to be a really decent watch, and I always use a word throwback, and it will be a throwback performance. We've seen it already under Sean Dyche against Arsenal. Throw Beto into the mix as well, with, you know, give Beto 1 hour 65 and get Dom on fresh 25 minutes. You know, this is what it's all about, and this is why, as much as there was a lot of negatives from the end of the transfer window, there are some positives to take, and we, like Lee said earlier on, we have got now what seems to be a bit of a goal-scoring threat in Beto and Dan Juma. Obviously, Dom being fit, Dwight McNeil coming back. That's a lot better than what we've seen in recent years, in my opinion. But Lee, what's your thoughts going into the game? Like I said, you know, Arsenal, they are flying high. Phil said, though, a little bit leaky at the back. They have conceded a few goals. They drew at home to Fulham. You know, they conceded. They didn't beat Forest 2-1 in the first game. They're not saying they're firing all cylinders, but obviously they're still very effective, aren't they, given the fact they've got 10 points out of 12?
Well, I just told you, Evan, your last comment says everything you need to know. You know, that they've not been probably at their best, but they're still pretty much nearly 100% record. So thought they were very fortunate against United. It was a bit of a nothing game. One of those VAR decisions, which was just, you know, absolutely minuscule. It was one of those VAR decisions where, weirdly, if it had been at Old Trafford, they probably would have got it. Do you know what I mean? But the fact that it was at Arsenal. And then they then proceeded to obviously, you know, get picked off straight after that. They would have probably lost that game if that goal gets given. But no, I think look, this could be a really timely game for us. You know, the first game after an international break is normally, not always, but normally the best time, isn't it, to play some of these bigger sides. Because a lot of their players will have gone away on international duty. The last thing they want to do is come back to an away game at Goodison. Mikel, obviously, a notorious planner, would have probably wanted to have a full week to work with him before coming. He won't have that. So that's good news for us. And like Phil just alluded to, our record against them, particularly at Goodison, is pretty good. Obviously, away from home, it's garbage. They've hammered us a few times. But we just have to be solid. We just have to be solid again in this game. Solid is the key. I think there's goals in this team now. You know, looking at the likes of Dan Juma, as I said before, Beto looking like, you know, he's definitely going to add something to us. He's going to add a completely different dimension to us. We've got those players coming back. You know, McNeil will be back in, pushing for a starting place. Good news for us. You know, Harrison, I think, will be in and around the squad. Will he make the bench? Probably unlikely, maybe, but there's a chance. Suddenly the team just looks a little bit like, you know, Harrison's goals and assist record, by the way, it's very good. Do you know what I mean? So that'll add to us as well, wherever he comes in. So it could work out. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. They could quite easily come and play us off the pitch like Arsenal's of the past. You know, I'm not saying this Arsenal team is up there with Wenger's, you know, Henri, Bergkamp, Pires team, but you know, they also have that quality, don't they? The likes of Saka, who gets better every single year, phenomenal player. Odegaard, what a snipper he was. I think they got him for, was it 30 million, something like that? I mean, that's looking ridiculous right now. What a player, good age. He's now the captain. You know, they've signed Declan Rice. Obviously got the winner, effectively, in inverted commas, against United. You know, he will be used to coming to grounds like Goodison. And the Arsenal have always been accused of being a bit soft, haven't they, when it gets tough? He won't be soft. You know what I mean? He'll still be covering every blade of grass, trying to, you know, basically, you know, stick up for his team, if you like, or be more solid, which they haven't been in the past. But it could hinge on a moment in this game, couldn't it? It really could. And I just hope that, you know, we have that little bit more quality with the forward players we've brought in.
That's it. I mean, you know, there are a couple of players you mentioned, obviously Harrison there. I can't see him making the Arsenal game, but who knows? But the other players we mentioned should be there. Lewis Dobbin, obviously, and Michael Keane missed the last game. They should be back in and around the squad as well. Arsenal, a couple of concerns themselves. You know, Thomas Partey's out until probably the end of October. Gabriel, he's a bit of a doubt. The new signing, is it the right back, Timber? He's definitely out. So they've got a few issues themselves. So let's, you know, make no mistake, it might not be a full-strength Arsenal side that we're going to be facing. Saka was hobbling around the pitch during the England game after Mikhailenko gave him a couple of little knocks yesterday. Now, whether, you know, you assume he'd be okay, finish the game, but you just don't know how the international week's going to play out in terms of injuries for both sides, I suppose. But I am looking forward to the game. As I say, I think it's good to face these kinds of sides after a break and when momentum has been broken. That's probably the real key thing. So it should be a real interesting one. Obviously, the game's just being shifted as well. Should have been Saturday, shouldn't it? It was due to be, was it the late game on the Saturday, and they moved it to half four on the Sunday because of Newcastle of all teams. So obviously it's now the half four on the Sunday at Goodison Park. But we're going to round off obviously with our predictions. Phil, thoughts on the game? What are you saying?
Again, like you both said, no full week for Mikel to repair. Obviously, momentum broken, as you said, Mike. I am going to go for 2-2.
I'd certainly say 2-2, that's for sure. Lee, what are you saying?
I'm going to say it's going to kickstart. I'm going to say 1-0 again. I'm going to see us sitting off. I think he'll go with a double six, like Pete said before. And I think I can see his... I don't know. It'd just be typical of us, isn't it? You know, I mean, two games we should have won against Wolves and against Fulham. Fulham without Paulinho are a very different team, by the way. Paulinho's a hell of a player. He was one of the main reasons they got a result against Arsenal. But yeah, I just think I just think, yeah, I can just see it. I can just be typical of us, just do something and get a result. And I think we need it, don't we?
We certainly need it. I'd definitely take a 1-0 win. I think it'll be 1-1. I think we can certainly get a point from it. I can see an Arsenal red card as well. That's what I'm going for. So put a bit of money on that. I can definitely see us trying to get under the skin in some way, shape or form. So I think that that'll be part of the game. But as you know, a draw, as I said earlier on, would be a real positive. And you know, we do need something to sort of kickstart the season a little bit. We've had a little bit of positivity given the fact that we got our first points. As you know, people might argue we should be winning that game, and we should. But you know, a point's better than none, and obviously got to win in the League Cup as well. So I'm going to say 1-1. And we've lost Pete, unfortunately. He's had to leave us prematurely. So Pete would have said 5-0 Everton as well. Beto hat-trick and 2 for James Tarkowski from a corner. So we'll see how that plays out as well. But that's us for this week. It's a bit of a bumper show, obviously, with us being off last week. But always good to get back behind the microphone and have a chat. If you can, give us obviously a bit of a rating on Spotify and Apple. That'll really help us as well. Make sure those who are in the fantasy league get your fantasy teams in. I'm doing really well for once after a real solid start. If any tips come my way, absolutely expert in the previous game week. Lee's laughing because he's just jealous because I had such a good week. But not many people had Haaland and Ferguson up front, did they? But you know, I was microphone's back on now because he wants to say something about his little baby.
Hold on, you do this every year, mate. You do this every year. You're the type of manager that comes in, has an instant impact, and then gets sacked after about 3 months, and then walks away with £7 million.
Listen, I'm not averse to that kind of performance, but I'll tell you what, I've been a shining light in a couple of these game weeks so far this season. So we'll see how that plays out. Anyway, you know, you live and die by your decisions in this game, and whether I'm still interested to come the middle of October is another story. But if I'm not, you will never hear about our fantasy league for the rest of the season. But as I say, that's us for this week. Do you want to say something, Lee, before I sign off?
I was just going to say, mate, well, class is in the form of winning 2 in a row, isn't it? You know what I mean? I mean, some would say Guardiola. I mean, that's all I'm saying.
Some would say you need to get a life and you spend too much time listening to these Fantasy League podcasts and reading articles about what players that you should pick and copying the experts' teams. But that's just my opinion.
That's just knowledge, mate. Just knowledge. You can't just copy the team. They don't win it every year. I mean, it's just knowledge, mate. It's just knowledge.
Yeah. Okay. I believe you. Thousands wouldn't. But that's us for this week. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll be back ourselves next week. Obviously, it's a late game on the Sunday, so the chances are we'll be out Monday, Tuesday after the Arsenal game. So look back on that and look ahead to the difficult trip to Brentford the following weekend. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. 3 Blues, 3 Opinions, 1 Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.